Well, Republican candidate Donald Trump cops worldwide criticism for proposing to ban Muslims from entering the United States. Here in Australia, former Prime Minister Tony Abbott has issued a rallying cry to Australian Muslims to reclaim their faith. Writing in the Daily Telegraph today, the former Prime Minister says Australians should stop apologising for their Western values, describing Islamist fanaticism as the great challenge of our time. Tony Abbott then adds that Australia should be ready, in his words, to proclaim the clear superiority of our culture to one that justifies killing in the name of God. I'm joined now by Mehmet Ozalp, Associate Professor and Director of the Centre for Islamic Studies at Charles Sturt University. Mehmet Ozalp, welcome back to Breakfast.
Good morning.
What's your view of Tony Abbott's column today?
Well, maybe Tony Abbott should tell us what kind of Islam he wants. I'm genuinely curious to sit down with him and he can look at me in the eye and say, if we were to reform Islam in the way he wants to, would that really stop ISIS or the ilk like that? I don't think it will change anything. We have just recently, last week, have released a research, that a very extensive research that showed that the more religious Muslims become in Australia, the more they're accepting of Australian values and multiculturalism, diversity. That really goes against what he was saying. In reality, what we have is that we have a normative Islam that far majority of Muslims subscribe to and understand, and certainly the one that I have studied and also practice, there is no problem with peace and Western norms or the civilization as we have it. So I'm really curious to know what he means by a reform in Islam.
He says in the article that although most Muslims utterly reject terrorism, some are all too ready to justify death to the infidel. And he says surveys of British and French Muslims typically show up to 30% sympathise with the aims, if not the methods, of Islamic State.
Those kind of researchers look at the political narrative of ISIS rather than Islam that they claim to represent. If we make a well-intended or charitable reading of Abbott, what is required is that a theological refutation of ISIS and the Islamic arguments and rhetoric, that is missing. So in that sense, we don't need a reform in Islam, but there is an Islamic response required. The literature that comes from normative Islamic tradition, they deal with the weak faith, perhaps moral issues, maybe deepening of some concepts, but there's nothing really focused there that addresses those kind of claims. That doesn't mean there's a lot of material, raw material, but all of that has to put together and explained in a language that modern Muslims can understand, and also the Western people as well that can look at it. I mean, I've written a lot, I've written a number of books explaining these things. The thing is, we don't get the coverage that ISIS unfortunately gets and goes into the minds and hearts of young Muslims who don't understand Islam. That's another thing. I've met a lot of people who are on the verge of radicalization. They don't know Islam at all. One young 17-year-old did not know the opening chapter of the Quran. You must know that as a Muslim to do your daily prayers. He didn't even know that by heart. We're talking about ignorance as well here, that people are then succumbed to ISIS narrative or rhetoric.
Does that mean there's no theological change that's required to deal with this global threat?
I think the theology is there. It's just the response is lacking. The ISIS has a narrative, and this narrative is built on an interpretation of the world or what's happening to Muslims around the world, especially in Middle East. And then they build a solution saying that only a violent response, a military response works, nothing else works. I have actually done a counter-narrative to that earlier this year, and worked with a group of 40, 50 young Muslims in Sydney and developed a counter-narrative, and it really works. When you sit down and talk to these kids and explain what Islam really is, they can appreciate it, because there's a lot of verses and the prophetic sayings from Prophet Muhammad that that condemn the killing of innocent people. And it's very clearly laid out there. You don't need to sit down and analyze it for hours, but a powerful voice has to be represented. And I think the counter-narrative is the key one, an alternative interpretation of the world that is ultimately more Islamic and more reasonable and effective for Muslims to deal with their grievances.
When I quoted to you Tony Abbott's statistic that surveys show 30% of British and French Muslims sympathise with the aims but not the methods of Islamic State, you said that was a political support rather than a religious support. Explain what you mean there.
What means, whenever these issues come up, the ISIS, it's really what Muslims come to mind is that the invasions of Iraq. You know, if they say, for example, if Iraq was not invaded, ISIS would not come out. The inability for world powers to intervene early in Syria, that would also prevent the rise of ISIS. So they talk, and then there is the killing of Muslims, civilians. That is, we don't even know the numbers, and it can be hundreds of thousands. So there is anger and sometimes even rage to what's happening to Muslims, and that nobody talks about that. So that's what Muslims see. Those Muslims who may be sympathetic to ISIS see that side of injustice in their view to what's happening to Muslims, and they hold Western powers somewhat responsible.
And the numbers really would be 30% of the Muslim populations of Britain and France having at least a political sympathy with the aims but not the methods of Islamic State?
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen those research, but there are other research, like the one we have done in Australia, that shows that Muslims have no problem with Australian values, or that's the kind of thing Tony was saying, that there's a civilizational problem, or there's an inability for Muslims to integrate. I think he really mixed many issues in one article. If we're going to talk about, you know, what's happening in Middle East, we need to talk about causes and conditions, you know, what generates ISIS. And that's a political thing. So recently, for example, world expert on Islam, John Esposito, said very clearly in a conference in Sydney that it's the grievances that Muslims have that is the issue. And then they build on that. People like ISIS build an Islamic justification to their political message. And I think the two are mixed.
We're with Professor Ozalp, Mehmet Ozalp from Charles Sturt University, Director of the Center for Islamic Studies. What do you think of when you hear the term clash of civilizations?
I think that doesn't help. If that's what we want, you know, we can clash. And if we want a dialogue of civilization, we can work towards that. And there are people out there in the world. Actually, UN has something called Dialogue of Civilizations. I think there is a book written by Professor Richard Blewett. He says that Islam and the Western Europe, the Christian Europe, have a lot more in common and historical interaction than any other civilization. So we just have to look into history to know that we haven't, yes, there has been clashes like crusades and colonization and other things, but there has been great dialogue as well and interaction. I think Muslims have learned from the West, but also Western world learned from Muslims, especially in 13th, 12th centuries, when there was a translation movement in Europe that translated Arabic works, and an intellectual revolution took place. So that was caused by Islamic civilization. So where do we put that?
Mehmet Ozal, thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Associate Professor, Director of the Center for Islamic Studies at Charles Sturt University.